you know, at the end of the day, building a community is an exercise in finding your people. Mm. And it's an exercise in helping your people see that the other people are also their people.
Hey, friend, it's David Obinsky here in Brooklyn. Here at the Portfolio Career Podcast, we help you take ownership of your portfolio career and design the life that you want to live. Okay, so episode 250. Wow. Thanks for all of your help and support along the way. And I'm really excited for what's ahead for us. And if you've got any questions, thoughts, I would love to hear from you. Send me an email or hit me up online, social media. And so for this episode, I wanted to do something special, and this is it. This is a live recording episode in front of an audience with an audience Q&A throughout. It's an interactive event format that I've been calling podcast social events or podcast mixers. This episode is with Ankit Shah, the founder of Tea with Strangers, a community organization that brought together 20,000 people through 2,000 events in 15 cities. And so in this episode, you'll learn about building Tea with Strangers and then transitioning away from it, Ankit's definition of community and thoughts for community builders, building a relationship with yourself, and the difference between loneliness and being alone. Ankit has a TEDx talk and a blog post called Being Alone that you'll likely want to check out after this episode. So if you're interested in community building and relationships with others and with yourself, this episode is for you. As always, this episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There, you can also sign up for my free podcasting course and get started with your podcast today. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Here we go with Ankit. So let's just dive right in. Tea with Strangers. I can imagine you learned some social skills through it. Can you maybe share an example of some skills that you learned talking to a lot of strangers?
Sure. And for those of you who don't know what Tea with Strangers is, it was a community organization I ran for a few years in like 2013 to 18. And we brought small groups of strangers together for meaningful conversations around the world. And we had a lot of hosts who facilitated and held the space for these conversations. And I was the first host, and I did a lot of these conversations around the world. I learned a lot of things, but I think probably the most significant is that everyone has a reason for what they're doing. And I think that can be like an obvious truth, but until you sit down and hear enough people talk about their perspectives and why they believe what they believe, why they've chosen what they've chosen, why they're considering what they're considering, the things that they said no to, and the way that they react to all kinds of ideas that might challenge them, the more you realize that like people really do have stories. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean like stories to share. I mean inner narratives and monologues that are kind of informing the texture of how they are responding to life. And a lot of the time we never get the opportunity to actually hear what those stories are, but if you have enough information to believe for sure that story is somewhere, whether or not you find out, I think you approach people with a lot more grace.
Mm-hmm. What's one way that we could, or how do you think we could talk to strangers more effectively or with curiosity? Like, what does that kind of look like? Of like, are there ways that we could? Looked like you had a thought. So I was just like, I'm just going to stop.
I guess, I think talking to strangers as a categorical way of interacting is really, I don't know, it leaves a lot of room for interpretation. Like, why do you want to talk to a stranger, I think, is like a really root question. And I think like the answer to that really is in what conversation are you having with yourself? Mm-hmm. The more you can understand the thoughts that are running through your mind, even not consciously, but just pay attention to like why it is that something might be showing up for you. I think the more present you can be when you're actually interacting with a stranger, because you know where you're coming from.
Hmm. And what you're talking about reminds me a lot about this being alone piece that you wrote. And we'll get into that in a little bit, but I'm also really curious about like these skills from building Tea with Strangers. Like, how do you think that shows up in addition to talking to strangers, having a lot of conversations and building this community, but like, how do you think some of those skills and from that experience kind of still show up in your day-to-day these days?
I think probably my greatest skill in anything I do professionally as a community builder or just like in my relationships with, you know, my family, my friends and you know, broader sense of community of the people that I interact with on a regular basis. I think it's all kind of rooted in patience and understanding. I think the thing that, I don't know, I guess like takes me very far is that whenever I'm talking to someone or interacting with them, I'll always assume that there is something to be understood as opposed to something to be assessed or perceived or judged. And I think that creates a really spacious container between me and anyone that I'm interacting with, which I think creates space for them to say what's on their mind. And a lot of the time, most problems are a reflection of people not feeling like they can actually be themselves or say what they're thinking, or like who they are is not being accepted or welcomed. And I think that if you can kind of create a space that makes people feel like they're allowed to be, a lot of problems just kind of dissolve.
Wow.
Sorry, this sounds like a therapy. I didn't mean
for me. Yeah.
I actually did come from therapy like an hour before this. So I might just be in a space.
I dig it. So and so you talked a lot about there about like kind of creating the space. Is there anything about like how to ask certain questions that you learned that people here might be able to apply?
There's no playbook. There's no playbook.
What?
There's no deck of
That's
cards.
That's what I promised people.
There's no deck of cards. There's no list of questions. You've probably seen We're Not Really Strangers and you think it's a great game. And these things are true. But the thing is, the way to actually have a good conversation is not saying, I have a question in my hand. Let me ask it to you. It's, I have a question in my head and in my heart. And I want to inquire because I'm actually curious about what's happening. Not curious about curiosity. Curiosity as a concept is a different thing than actually channeling and embodying curiosity in the space between you and someone else. When you actually have a question for someone else, it's a reflection of something that you see, and you have like a gap between what you know to be true or what they have actually shared with you and what it is that you want to understand. And I think that, like, you know, it's funny. A lot of the time when I ran Tea with Strangers, a lot of hosts, before their first tea time, they would either text me or email me or call me, and they'd be like, hey, I need a pep talk. And like, what do I ask? Like, what are their questions? And I think a lot of the time, like, and I was always very, I would always lead with, there is no list of questions. Like, and don't get me wrong, if I were to take stock of all the questions I've ever asked, sure, I could make a list, but none of those questions are questions that I want to draw from on command. They are questions that I draw from because I was wondering. And I think like really tapping into that curiosity is a muscle to be built. So something I would always tell the host is like, think about what you've been thinking about and then ask yourself why. And now ask yourself what it is that someone else might be able to tell you about what you're thinking about. Now go ask that question.
And okay, so if there's no playbook for questions, is there a playbook for community builders?
There's many of them. There's a lot of them.
Okay.
I mean, they've been published, not by me, but lots of people have written books. Lots of people write blog posts. There's a lot of content out there for community builders. What are we asking?
What am I asking? I'm asking if you were building a Tea with Strangers today, knowing what you know now from the years of building it, like, what would you do if you were going to start today for the community builder that's here in the audience?
Yeah, no, I'm this guy. I am still this guy. I ask myself this question, you know, even though I built Tea with Strangers, I'm looking for not my next Tea with Strangers, but rather, you know, at the end of the day, building a community is an exercise in finding your people. And it's an exercise in helping your people see that the other people are also their people. And, you know, you have two roles. You are a member of the community as well as a facilitator and a shepherd of the space that everyone else is kind of taking part in, right? And I think that requires anyone who's building a community to really, again, go inward. What is it that you need? Who are the parts, or what are the parts within you that feel like they have not yet been spoken to? And what are the parts within you that you wish someone else would see? And how can you build enough courage and confidence to believe that that part of you actually is real, and that it exists in other people, and that there's a language that you can actually speak that might actually land for other people to say, oh, that's me too. Mm.
Damn. And does anybody here have any questions on this, about community building or about, you know, not the question playbook, but having conversations.
I don't hate lists of questions, to be clear. I love we're not really strangers. Just to be clear, I didn't mean to sound like a hater.
No, not at all. Did anybody have any question? If you do, just either come up and I'll hand you the mic, but we can keep going if there's not. Gail, yeah.
I'm curious if you're going to be asking this question too, but are there any questions that you were asked in these conversations that really stuck with you or really impacted you through these, like through the process of talking with all these people?
There's like one. I mean, there's been many questions, but there's one that like immediately comes to mind. And it was a question around motivation and why it is that, I don't remember the exact substance of the conversation, like what dreams or like ambitions that were like the subject of the conversation. But someone asked at the end of like a share, they said, to what end? ? Just to what end? And I remember I was really taken aback because I was probably talking about why I built Tea with Strangers. It may have been a very meta conversation about like, oh, you know, you're doing this thing. Why are you doing this? And I would like talk about like all the reasons, all the dreams that I had, the mission of the organization, what I got out of it. And they're like, yeah, but to what end? And I would like share a response. And they're like, yeah, but also to what end? And then they kept going. And it really required me to like, to inquire within again. And this is like a recurring theme about what do I really want? And maybe do I already have it? And I think that was like that even though you can land on that conclusion once, but I do think that there's, you know, 1,000 circumstances in any given day where you might need that reminder in the context of whatever it is that you feel like is incomplete within yourself. And you know, questions in a way are also a vehicle to completing something that is open. I think the question to what end really, I don't know, it's like another version of saying why, but I think it kind of speaks to a very ambitious and goal-oriented mentality that I know that I would say I identify with, and I think a lot of people do. So I think that really, it pokes the question of like, what is it that you really want?
Love that. Thank you.
To what end? I feel like I'm going to have to weave that in at some point.
I will say it's an uncomfortable question. It's a really uncomfortable question.
I'm curious what your values are and what are like and why, and also the ones that you look for in others.
What are my values?
For friends or
stop. This feels like a very personal question. I would say like I do have a laundry list of values, but there are like three that I would say I lean into when I think about things on like a long-term horizon. And for me, it's like very personal. This is like not something that I don't really talk about this very much. This is like between me and my notebook, the first is tenderness, the second is greatness, and the third is service. I think to me, those are things that they exist in a comfortable tension with one another, and they all kind of speak to a different part of me that feels like when I have actually kind of embodied. Honestly, I couldn't tell you that I've embodied all three at the same time. Like that feels like, Infinity Stone kind of analogy somewhere there. But but I think that if I'm nailing two of three, I feel pretty good about it. And to me, like, you know, greatness kind of captures ambition, craft, originality, specificity. Tenderness is about being soft and strong. I think there is something about being able to move with confidence, but also with a receptivity to what might present itself to you, and to not be so hard-headed that that you can't receive. And then service, I just think is remembering that it's not about you. Like, I think there is something much bigger than each one of us that I think can get really lost in a really fast and insecure environment, which I think is the world that we live in right now.
Wow. Yeah.
I have a tougher question.
That was pretty hard. That was already pretty hard.
It's even harder. So I was just wondering, like, how can you ensure that community is being built? You go and you have tea with a stranger, right? But that's not creating community yet. Like, how can you ensure that those connections are meaningful, lasting? You know, it can't happen every time, but, you know, would that be the goal?
It could be the goal. It wasn't my goal, but it could be. I think if the idea is to build long-lasting and persistent connections, everyone needs to be bought in. You can't force people to want something that they don't subscribe to. And I think that's a really hard reality when it comes to, like, community builders who are ambitious. And that's not to contrast with community builders who are unambitious, but it is to say that I think some community builders also have growth goals. They might have, like, audience goals. They might have reputational goals, brand equity goals. And the thing about, you know, goals that are, I would say, expansive in nature versus goals that are cultivating in nature is that they pull at one another. The best communities are small. They're small groups of people that meet regularly, that feel like they understand one another, that feel like their roots are actually growing in some kind of intertwined shared garden. There is something about that that makes people feel connected and like they can rely on people around them. And I think when people actually don't feel that, it's usually because the seeds are too far spread apart and they don't actually have shared stakes. And I mean that both in the figurative gardening analogy as well as literally, like, people don't actually have something that if it suffers for one of them, it actually suffers for all of them. And I think that a lot of the time environments where what affects one affects many are scary environments to enter. It's one of the reasons why we live in a really non-committed culture. And that's true of friendship, romantic relationships, community, you know, religious institutions, political ideologies, all of it. People don't actually want to be too invested in the fate of the others because it doesn't feel like the fate of the others is something that's going to serve them. And that's not a criticism. That's just a matter of fact reality that we live in right now. And I think if you actually want community to be built, you should find small ways in which shared stakes actually matter. Which, you know, if you were to play with the heuristic of what is it we all want and what is it that we would all be sad, lesser, upset, lacking if we didn't have. And if you can actually answer that question, like, that's like 90% of the work right there is just knowing what is the thing that we actually share. Not a commonality of like, oh, we all like the color purple. No, it's like something that it's not an interest. It's like a shared, like, pillar of life, neighborhood, cleanliness of the hallway, objective as it relates to a mission that we all care about. Are we better suited to actually achieve that thing that matters to all of us?
Speaking of non-committal, super grateful for everyone that is here tonight and committed. But that was a bad joke. Separate from in the beginning of 2020, you wrote a piece, a really long blog post that was a follow-up, I think, to a TEDx talk that you gave around our relationship with ourself and being alone. Can you talk to us about, like, we were talking about like these relationships with other people and stuff, and you hinted at a little bit around the importance of our relationship with ourselves. But what would you say is kind of like the thesis of that? I know it's a lot of words, but like if you were to boil it down to like what the being alone piece is all about.
It is a lot of words. But the thesis in short is that that there are many selves that we have to interact with, and they can all have a conversation with each other. And the more we can actually acknowledge those many selves, the better suited we are to understanding the context in which we live in our own skin. And that a lot of loneliness is really a function of context collapse. It's feeling like you are the only person that understands the thing that you are going through, and no one else can connect with it. And that feeling can be really gutting. But being alone and being lonely are not actually the same thing.
Mm. Say more about that.
I think being lonely is a sensation. You could be lonely right here. You know, in the sense that, like, I walked in and I immediately felt this sense of, like, I can't remember the last time I've spoken in public. It's been a really long time that I've been in front of a room. Like, who are all these people? What are they here for? Like, you know, there's something about that experience that gives me a lot of, you know, I felt my heart rate rising when I was walking in the room. And that's a very lonely experience. Mm. Am I around a bunch of people? Yeah. Some people here actually know some of the work I've done? Yeah. Arguably, that should make me feel connected. But what's going on in my head is, what the fuck am I about to say on this podcast? like, who are these people? What are they going to think of me? Mm. I wish my haircut was not scheduled for yesterday, for tomorrow, but rather was yesterday. Like, this haircut sucks right now. Doesn't matter. Yeah. Basically, the point is, the sensation of loneliness is one where you feel like no one's actually experiencing or understanding what it is that you are going through. So you feel like you're the only person in the world who's experiencing whatever it is that's going on. And I think there is an opportunity in noticing where that experience is coming from, where that story is coming from. And that's where I think the practice of being alone can actually help you manage your relationship to loneliness. Because when you're alone, you can, instead of feeling overwhelmed by whatever this inner monologue might actually be saying, you can say, hey, what are you actually saying? Okay, let me listen to that. That's really interesting. Why?
Yeah.
To what end? Like, whatever the questions Gail's are, question, yeah. Whatever the questions are, you can have that dialogue within yourself. It's actually not a monologue, even though it might feel like a monologue. And I think that's like a muscle that needs to be built. And I think that was kind of one of the objectives of publishing the essay was giving a name to that muscle so that people could say, oh, that's a thing to work. Mm. Why don't I start?
And that looks like going for a walk without your phone kind of thing?
Doesn't look like anything. It doesn't look like anything. It can look like that.
Okay.
It can look like washing your dishes. It can look like cooking. It can look like going for a run. It can look like staring out the window. And, like, you know, I like being in big open spaces, because when I'm in big open spaces, I can see my thoughts. Like, I have like I literally can see words or shapes, or, you know, and not literally, it just, yeah. That's how it feels. But if I'm in a tight space, I actually don't feel like my thoughts don't have a place to be. Mm. Like, that's one of the reasons I have like a strong affinity to like natural light. And like certain color palettes, because it feels like whatever it is that's going on in my mind fits better with those things. And, you know, whatever it is that you can do comfortably on your own, you know, mechanically, I don't think the details actually matter. I think what actually matters is whatever gives your mind or your inner monologue like a space to breathe.
Yeah. Love that. Anybody have a follow-up question on this?
Yeah.
So speaking of loneliness, this is a related topic, but a lot of community builders and people who are connectors by nature or just because they enjoy connecting people, I've noticed that myself and others in the same space have faced burnout at some point, because there's a fine line between authenticity and phoniness, for lack of better words. How have you dealt with that, or how have you experienced that yourself? And what made you come to the decision to sunset your involvement in Tea with Strangers in 2018?
Exactly that. Like, you're giving it a name. It was burnout. I think it's a hard journey to work on something that you feel such a strong affinity and sense of identity towards, or like with, and then to let it go. It's kind of, there is an element of ego death that's actually taking place, because you're putting a version of yourself behind you and you're saying that version of me is no longer. And I think that's a really, really hard inner task to take on. And depending on the state of your organization or entity and the people that are involved, it can actually be really complicated, as far as, like, you know, if it's a company, you might, and it's funded, there might be people who have financial stake in what you're doing. If it's a community of people who are relying on what it is that you've built for some kind of need or support in their life, you might feel like you're letting them down. If, like, you had an idea that you felt like just needed to be in the world, and then if you're not the one actually pushing it forward, that idea is no longer breathing. Like, that can actually feel like you've actually failed against, like, a sense of ambition that you had. And those things are all really difficult stories to let go of and to grieve. But I do think that there is something really critical in understanding why it is that you're doing the thing you're doing. I think something that I learned for myself with Tea with Strangers, Tea with Strangers was a volunteer-run organization. I would say that in some ways it was very successful, in that it reached far and wide. It engendered a strong degree of commitment. It created space for really meaningful conversations for more people than I could even conceive of in my mind. And you know, there still are moments in my day-to-day life where I might meet somebody who's heard of it or who's been touched by it. And there's something so meaningful about that. But I think I really needed to do a bit of a check on myself as to, why did I start this? And what am I getting out of it? And what do I want from it? What is the future of this organization? If I, say theoretically I wasn't burnt out, and I was just thinking, okay, I show up with my full ass self, I'm doing the best I can, I engender all the resources and support, money is not an issue, people are not an issue, interest is not an issue, chapters and reach are not an issue, brand equity is not an issue. I think of all of these things in the most unconstrained way I possibly could. What is it that this organization is doing for me? And that's not selfish. It's just acknowledging what fuel is driving the resource that is you. And what I realized for myself is I want different things. And that was a really hard thing that took me like a year and a half to like actually come to terms with. And that was like very painful. It was like a very, and I think, you know, this is going to sound like a weird flex, but the thing that landed the hardest for me is, I think sometime in 2019, late 2018, early 2019, the New York Times did a whole feature on Tea with Strangers. Like, it was like, and it was like, not like Tea with Strangers had a name somewhere in an article or quote. It was like a whole ass piece all about Tea with Strangers. And I was like, whoa, I did something that ended up in the New York Times? Like, what? And then I was like, I got other stuff to do today. and there was something about that realization. I was like, why am I not celebrating this? Like, why? Like, I don't even think I posted it on, like, I don't think I posted it on Twitter or Instagram. I didn't post it on Facebook. I was like, okay. Like, I mean, and that wasn't like, this is a small accomplishment. It actually is a huge accomplishment. I felt really good about it. I felt really good in the sense that, like, I felt proud that something I had done had achieved, you know, this acknowledgement. That felt great. But there was no part of me that was like, oh, the doors that are going to open with this. I was like, I have other doors that I'm already in right now. I'm doing other stuff. I'm thinking about other things. I'm on other missions right now. And that's not to say that I don't give a shit about the Tea with Strangers mission. It's just saying that where I am in life is a different place. And I still got so much ahead of me. And I'm going to do those things. And those are going to be great. And maybe I'll learn something from the journey of ending Tea with Strangers that will give me a little more foresight into ending things more gracefully. Because I will say one thing that I definitely feel like a sense of regret around is that when I did Sunset Tea with Strangers, it wasn't done particularly well. And I think that was because it took me a year and a half to even acknowledge what the hell was going on. Mm. I was so in denial that I was not bought in to the thing that I just spent the last 4.5, 5 years of my life completely and wholly dedicated to. And I think when you're young, when you feel that sense of passion about anything, it's the only time you've ever felt something like that in your whole life. You think it's gotta last forever. And then you get older and you realize, oh, life happens in seasons and phases. And that doesn't reduce what that season or phase meant. It just means that there's going to be more of them.
Great question.
Might be a follow-up of that or other questions, but how has your definition of community evolved over time and especially going forward? And how much of a priority is it for you to develop community for yourself versus for others? And how has that evolved over time?
Well, I'll answer the easy part. I think developing community for myself has always been the first and foremost priority. In my mind, if you're not doing that, any community you're building for others is, it's a product. And that's not a bad thing. Building a business that sells a product is a calling for some people. But if you're not a part of that community yourself, and if it's not serving a need for you, then it's worth understanding that what you are creating is a product called community, as opposed to your community. And I know a lot of community builders who do exactly this. And I was pretty close to becoming one of them. And I just realized that that wasn't exciting to me. That's not a bad thing. It's not exciting to me, and so it is bad. It's just, I don't care to do that. What was the other question?
Just in terms of how community, your definition of community has evolved.
Yeah.
Yeah, the question was around how has your definition of community evolved over time.
You need to do that for the mic.
Yeah.
Got it. I was like, what? Okay. I was like, we heard. I think my definition of community has only gotten smaller for me personally. For my work, it is a very different thing. And for context, I work at Facebook, where I work on the community's product, building tools for group admins to support them in content moderation and how they build engagement in their communities, as well as kind of new formats for people to connect more meaningfully online. And if we want to double the length of this podcast, I'm happy to talk about that as well. But for me personally, I think I've learned more and more that what I need from community is knowing where I can go or who to call when I feel, insert any feeling here. That's how it works for me. When I'm feeling, and I don't just mean like sad, happy, excited, but I also mean like when I'm feeling confused about being a first generation immigrant, when I'm feeling an urge to tap into the younger version of me that played basketball 7 days a week, when I am feeling overwhelmed by the stresses of being a professional, an uncle, a friend, a community member, and a version of me to myself, as well as a million other identities that it is that I happen to be wearing at any given moment. You know, when I'm feeling confused about what's going on with my plants right now, like all of those stories, I need like a something, a someone, a place to go. And I think what I've realized for myself is usually what exists at the end of that rainbow is not like grand and significant and full of thousands of people. It's usually filled with like, I don't know, like 1 to 20 people. Community can be a friendship, and community can be, you know, your hallway in your apartment building. And it can be the people that you see at the park on a regular basis. It can be, you know, the neighborhood that you walk around and you just see familiar faces. And I think what I've realized for myself is that I need those things. I need small, intimate, regular environments where I feel connected to people on the basis of something that we're sharing. And I think bigger ideas of community, like, I don't know, like crypto Twitter. Like, I don't know. No disrespect. I'm sure some of you work in crypto. We're in Williamsburg. I feel like that's just expected. It wouldn't surprise me if these pants were an NFT. Are they?
No.
Okay. They could be. You could mint that.
I'm not in crypto, so I don't know that. Yeah.
Well, if you wanted to, I'm sure somebody here could help. Yeah. For me, those communities, they don't do it for me because they don't feel like they're actually going to be there for you. Like, they're there for now. And if something's there for now, it's a fling. I wouldn't call it a community. It might be a hot fling with a community, but that community, you know, comes together and it disappears, like Burning Man. There for a week, disappears. No disrespect.
Yeah, none taken, none.
I'm sure some of you go to Burning Man too.
I guess last question. If there's like one thing that you think people here should do more of, what do you think that would be?
Write. And not to anybody. Don't publish it. I'm yelling this on purpose. Seriously. I really do think, like, you just gotta write to yourself. And I think it's worth paying attention to the voice that's in your head before you write to understand what the friction is. There's things that are coming out on the page that are not that are like a subset of the things that are happening in your head. And the more you can actually recognize the things that you're afraid of actually putting on the page, the more you can understand like whatever dark shadow corners there are in your own mind. And then when you can actually develop the courage to put that on paper and be like, whoa, I just said that. That is an incredibly formative, clarifying habit that I think opens the doors to any single thing you could ever dream of doing. And that doesn't have to be in community, but I do think that it creates a really sturdy foundation of you and yourself, and you're bringing yourself to everything you're doing. So the stronger you can be in your own skin, the more calmly, gracefully, you know, clearly move into the world. And that world is literally your world of relationships. And I don't just mean relationships with people. It's relationships with places, with ideas, with thoughts, with weather patterns, with your clothing, with the smell of the air. All of those things are relationships. And the more you can actually get clear on like what is happening in here, and I think writing is a great avenue for that, the healthier those relationships become.
Yeah. And I know you said you might not publish your writing, but if people wanted to see
I do got writing coming.
If people wanted to see your writing, stay in touch, learn more, where can they do that?
You should follow me on Instagram. Sorry. I do a lot of writing that I post on my Instagram stories. If you do follow me on Instagram, you'll know my Instagram stories are not short and they are very verbose. But it's a lot of writing, and somebody likes it. I like it. I like my Instagram.
And what's
stories.
The handle? And,
oh, yeah. I'm Ankit.fyi. It's ankit.fyi for the podcast listeners out there.
Yeah. Amazing. Let's give it up for Ankit. Hey, friend. Thank you for tuning in to this special episode of Portfolio Career Podcast. Would love to hear what you learned and what you enjoyed. You can find me on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, whatever is best for you. And as a reminder, I'm just one email away as well. This episode with timestamp notes is available on my website at portfoliocareerpodcast.com. There you can subscribe to my newsletter called One Email Away, which includes the best insights from the podcast and friend-sourced opportunities. So excited for you to build and grow your portfolio career. Thank you so much.